Welcome on in, everyone. It is a post-Greatest Day in Motorsports stock car scoop. We probably would have been doing this on the Greatest Day in Motorsports had the Coca-Cola 600 not gone north of 5.5 hours. We are now into Monday, but we have got a lot to talk about in the wake of Formula One, IndyCar, NASCAR, and I've got with me Michael Finley, Michael Bachman of Front Stretch. It's been a party of Mike's this week. We had Mike Massey on Friday, and I want to just dive right in because Formula One, we had Red Bull with a double podium, Sergio Perez getting the win, Charles Leclerc looking like he was possibly on his way to a win in Monaco finally, and things went south for him. A lot of other weird things going on with the race, with the rain delay, which we're used to in NASCAR, but we're not used to in Formula One. What can you guys say about how bizarre this race started?
Well, I mean, it's not very often we see. Usually when the FIA says the race will start at this time, then that means that the race will start at that time. So it was very, it kind of gave me Spa holes. But thankfully, they did not start the clock until they had the first lap under the green flag. I mean, Monaco feels like it was a day. It was literally a day ago now. But that Monaco race, we got really lucky that it rained because I don't know how you can pass under dry conditions at this track. We saw it at the end. Well, obviously, Sergio just couldn't make the pass. He could hold off Signs, even though he had 10 lap older tires.
It was certainly exciting watching two Ferraris and the two Red Bulls, 1, 2, 3, 4 at the end. But Mike Bachman, anything else you noticed about this?
No, yeah, it was a big day for Checo there getting the win at Monaco. And, you know, kind of want to focus on Charles Leclerc here because the fourth place finish, not getting podium at his home track where, you know, early in that race, it seemed like he was going to be well on his way. But poor communication, botched pit stop, found himself settled in fourth for most of that race. And, you know, these are mistakes now that are sort of piling up for this Ferrari team, specifically Leclerc himself. He's got that qualifying speed every single event, but he just cannot seem to close the deal now. And now with Checo getting the win here at Monaco, obviously Verstappen, the double podium for Red Bull, as you mentioned, Adam, you know, that championship battle continues to get closer now with Perez gaining points and, you know, Verstappen able to kind of, you know, gain a little bit more ground and, you know, hold his command at the top and Leclerc, you know, falling a little bit. So, you know, it was certainly a good event to kick off the triple threat today in Super Sunday.
Of course, Max Verstappen getting the championship lead last week with the Spanish Grand Prix win and extending it this week with the third place in Monaco finishing better than Leclerc and Perez entering the conversation as well. He's only 6 behind Charles Leclerc and 15 behind Verstappen. So we got 3 guys in double-digit points now. A couple hours later and a shorter gap than expected given the delayed start was the Indy 500. We had kind of a rotation of 3 or 4 guys out front all race. You had Pato O'Ward, you had Alex Palou, Scott Dixon, a couple of Ganassi guys, and Connor Daly for a little bit as well. But a Ganassi guy that was pretty quiet until the late stages with Marcus Ericsson, who has a couple wins under his belt in IndyCar, but certainly none as big as this. He's out there leading. Then a red flag comes out after Jimmy Johnson crashes, but he's able to get the win regardless, does a really phenomenal job of snaking his way through those last few laps, holding off Pato O'Ward. And Ericsson, this is, in terms of a guy whose career in IndyCar is relatively young, this is absolutely huge for him.
Yeah, it is a huge win for Marcus Ericsson. And like you said, quiet all day. But when you look at this Ganassi roster, he was certainly quiet coming into the week. I don't think many people had Ericsson, you know, circled as one of the top guys. When you take a look at some of these other Ganassi regulars, I mean, Alex Palou, obviously that ill-timed caution ending his chances where he had to make that emergency pit stop on pit road. Scott Dixon, the bad luck in the Indy 500 continues for him with the late speeding penalty ending his chance. And then, of course, as you mentioned, Jimmy Johnson, an Indy 500 debut to forget, you know, coming into this race looking for a good result on the oval. But this was Johnson's worst finish to date after crashing there at P28. So, you know, Marcus Ericsson in that final restart, being able to hold off Pato O'Ward like he did, to be able to block high and still, you know, grip that car down low into turn one. What a win for the former F1 driver, his third in IndyCar now, and certainly cementing his name in the record books. What a win and what a day for Ganassi that, you know, was dominated in the beginning. And then as all the cards fell and drivers continue to make mistakes, you know, Marcus Ericsson was there to take the win.
It was a weird day because I think we all kind of figured that Jimmy and Woman were going to do pretty good as rookies, but it turns out, oh, they didn't do anything. And also they both, neither of them finished, which was just really weird. And the weird thing is too, I mean, Marcus Ericsson, he was not a great Formula One driver. If you go back and look at his career, it seems like this last year, he's finally seemed to find his footing.
Ericsson, of course, jumping into the lead with the double points for the Indy 500. He is now in the championship lead. So a couple of significant points battles and points moves with these first couple of races. And then we had a couple hours to digest all that. Indy 500, kind of a tame one compared to what we've seen in the past. I'm pretty sure every single incident was a single car incident. No late race runs. Once Ericsson got past Pato, it was pretty much over, even with the red flag. But speaking of red flags, we had the Coca-Cola 600 coming up, of course, the evening, the finale to this grand trifecta. And okay, well, I kind of want to get to this in a couple different pieces. So let's start with, well, let's address the chaos in that this is probably one of the most exciting Coke 600s we've had in quite a while. We had the question going in of whether this would be more exciting than the last few, especially with the way the mile and a half have been. Vegas, Kansas, both a lot of fun to watch. Texas, not so much, but there's some caveats there that are kind of excuses, I guess. This was a lot of fun to watch. We had some pretty significant wrecks that we haven't seen in the 600 in quite some time. We had Chris Buescher flipping on the front stretch, which I know we'll get to as well. This is probably the most exciting 600, Finley, that I can remember since maybe like 2011, because 2011, of course, had Castle getting his splitter ripped off in the grass and Gilliland and Mark Martin getting stuck together and Dale Jr. running out of gas in the final corner. This was a heck of a race this evening.
So I was substitute for a column tonight called Big Six, which you can find on frontstretch.com. And I've done that column before after a bowling race where it kind of felt like you're trying to squeeze anything out of a walk, and there just isn't a whole lot though. I mean, this race, like, I could have kept going for another 1,000 words. Like, to me, the big story coming out of this race, you have Forces Hamlin, second Kyle Busch, and third Kevin Harvick. The big story this year in NASCAR has been all of these young guys, and then at the biggest and longest race of the year, it ended up being three guys with 45 years of experience between all three of them.
And this was such a huge thing for the next gen car, like we were talking about with the way it's performed at mile and a half has been pretty solid so far this year. People were worried about Texas. Those worries were confirmed by the All-Star race, but the fact that it wasn't full field and exhibition and all that kind of puts it in a category all on its own. But Mike Bachmann, there was so much passing, and I had a very good feeling about how this race was going to unfold competition wise when the first like four or five laps featured the front row side by side every second.
Oh my gracious, absolutely. This next gen car was unbelievable at Charlotte in the Coke 600. And you know, we are the past couple of years we've seen the Coke 600. I mean, I've obviously Kyle Larson dominating last year, Kyle Busch sweeping a couple years ago, and of course Martin Truex Jr. almost leading every single lap just a couple of years ago. We finally are able to get one that was just filled with virtually everything. I mean, we were dealt with the kitchen sink in this entire race, and I feel like that we still, you know, are digesting everything, and we're not going to be able to even remember half the stuff that happened because of how long it was. But to be able to, for us to be able to be glued to our televisions for 5.5 hours, however long it was the longest race of the year, but my God, was it one of the most exciting, chaotic races we've seen, you know, and coming a week removed from the Texas All-Star race, which yes, certainly did, you know, had its lows. But you take a look at, you know, the trends of these mile and a halfs this year with this next gen car, and they've been incredible. They really have. And, you know, these drivers driving these cars now, 19 total cautions today or something to that effect. I mean, these cars are tough to drive, and guys were on edge, pushing the limit, working to try and get the crown jewel. It was Denny Hamlin. He finally gets a Coke 600. Probably has to be the most important crown jewel for Hamlin as a Coca-Cola Racing Family driver. He's obviously won Daytona. He's obviously won the Southern 500. You know, the Brickyard obviously no longer on the Cup Series schedule with the running of the road course. So you can kind of eliminate that one. So Hamlin now with all three crown jewel events to his resume and his second win of the year. You know, you look back last year where it was a very slow start despite how consistent he was, but second win here, and, you know, Toyota now starting to really find their footing, I think.
Well, this was, of course, lengthwise, laps-wise, this is the longest NASCAR Cup Series race in history of 413 laps, 5 hours, 13 minutes, and 8 seconds, officially 18 cautions for 90 laps. Hamlin only leads 15 of those en route to his win, and that win was from the pole. To both of you guys, to close this out, so much craziness throughout this race. Chris Buescher, who flipped 4.5 times on the front stretch in the infield in one of the most bizarre crashes we've ever seen, in at least in recent memory. Such a bizarre race. We had two big ones, including one late where Austin Dillon sent it and they were 4 wide in the tri-oval. That does not work at Charlotte, and things absolutely hit the fan from there. But overall, I'm very satisfied. It's one of the most entertaining 600s in quite some time, and I for one am looking forward to every single mile and a half this year. Maybe not Texas, but I'll hold out a little bit of hope for them as well.
Well, don't forget, Adam, too. The finish came up as a result of Chase Briscoe having this amazing duel in the closing laps with Kyle Larson.
True.
He was trying so hard to do the one thing that his hero and his team owner, Tony Stewart, never was able to accomplish, which is get a win in one of these three original crown jewel races, which is insane to me, right? But he just, you know, he just rode on the knife edge for just way too long. And if you do that, you're going to end up stabbing yourself eventually. And that's just what ended up happening to him. Yeah. And then somehow he ends up finishing fourth.
And that was against Kyle Larson, who had the most up and down day and was on track to rebound and finish very, very well until that big one in the tri-oval sent him wrecking. But just an all over the place day for him and for a lot of guys. It was just an incredibly competitive race.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Kyle Larson, who said he drove the worst race of his career, you know, in that first half. And obviously the unbelievable speech that Cliff Daniels gave to that five team, you know, trying to rebound there in the second half. But, you know, it just preaching to the choir here and echoing everything you guys have said, just the unpredictability of what this next gen car provides. I mean, we didn't have a green flag run that lasted longer than 35 laps up until about 5 to go in stage 3. That's just how crazy this race was, and that's just how much action we got. But, you know, just to circle back real quick to Chase Briscoe, you know, this is not the first time that Chase Briscoe has wrecked himself out of a win. We go back to Bristol Dirt with Tyler Reddick, virtually the same situation. Luckily, Larson was able to get away. But Chase Briscoe, man, you know, doing everything that he can. Wasn't able to make it stick. He's, you know, gonna have to try and fix that going forward. He's got that win from Phoenix locked into the playoffs. But, you know, going forward, this next gen car on these mile and a halfs obviously speaks for itself. And these mile and a halfs are the bread and butter of the NASCAR schedule. So they got it right, and we're ready for more, man. But what a day. What a day all around. It was really, really exciting stuff.
Yeah, overall, and I did not expect the 600 to be the most exciting race, but it ended up being so for Michael Finley, Michael Bachman, thanks so much to them for joining me on this post-Charlotte, post-Greatest Day in Motorsports edition of Stock Car Scoop. We're going to be back Thursday and preview Gateway for the Cup Series first ever visit to the track, and we will see you guys then.